We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today two special guests, Brigadier General Carlos Charlie Martinez and Brigadier General Joseph Medina, both retired. Charlie was in the United States Air Force, and Joseph was with the United States Marine Corps. Gentlemen, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you. Great to be here. Great to be here.
Well, we have both of these gentlemen on because they are on the board of the Hispanic Veterans Leadership Alliance, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. But let me give you a little background on each of these gentlemen. Brigadier General Joseph Medina, United States Marine Corps, graduated from the U.S. Naval Academy and later went on to earn his Master's of Science degree in Systems Management from the University of Southern California. Had a number of assignments and teaching positions even, you know, with these generals. You always get these smart cookies. and one of his, assignments of note was the ground-up development of a new organization, the Expeditionary Strike Group 3, and he led the strike group during a combat operation or deployment in Operation Iraqi Freedom. He's been retired now for a number of years. His service period, I think, was 1976 to 2007, and he's very active in the civilian world in a number of major corporations and very interesting things that we probably won't have time to talk about. But I assure you, Brigadier General Medina's got quite the hell of a resume. And Brigadier General Carlos, or Charlie Martinez, is no slouch either. He was born in Havana, Cuba, grew up in Miami, Florida, graduated from the University of Miami with his BS in systems analysis, entered the Air Force to become a pilot, got assigned off to various flight training duties and other things. Along the way, picked up an MS in operations research from the George Washington University, and has a number of tours as a management engineer and as a missile test engineer. Ultimately, moved over to the Air Force Reserve. He had a variety of operations research and acquisitions positions through that his career as a reservist. He rose to the rank of Brigadier General, went back on some active duty time after 9/11, and his period of service is 1972 to 2006. Gentlemen, both of you, I could spend 20 minutes on, but I'm not going to be able to do that today because we're trying to cover some other issues. But I'm always curious. I guess I got to ask this question first, and I'll go to Charlie, if I can go to you first.
Sure.
It's always curious, and I think it's good to pass along to people, why did a nice boy like you from Miami go into the military?
Well, it's a real, ever since I was a child, I was always fascinated with the military and particularly with airplanes. And I had no intention of going into the military until, I was 1971. I was graduating. I got one of those low draft numbers, which meant that the Army was going to join me. So I thought, well, I'm not going to let the Army join me, so I'm going to join the Air Force instead. And pursue that childhood ambition of becoming a pilot. So that's what I did. Well, and I've never looked back and thought it was a bad decision. It was one of the best moves I ever made in my life.
Well, and we should say you met that boyhood dream of becoming a pilot, and they are a licensed and active instructor pilot as well.
That too, yes.
Joseph, let me turn to you. How did a nice boy like you end up at the Naval Academy?
Well, I come from a career military family. My father enlisted in the U.S. Army when he was 15 and a half, and that's at the end of World War II. He told me later, because he tried to come in the Marine Corps first, and they said he didn't weigh enough, so he joined the Army. He did 21 years in before he retired, based out of Fort Hood. And interestingly, I have a son that's also a Naval Academy graduate, and he's flying the V-22 in Okinawa. So between the three of us, we already have over 60 years of military service. So that's how I got started.
Well, those are a lot of times we see that this gets passed on. It's a family affair. Everybody recognizes the need to serve in some capacity. You don't have to make a career out of it. But that's great. That's an 60 years of service is incredible. So both of you gentlemen retired from the military, and some number of years later got involved in the Hispanic Veterans Leadership Alliance. Charlie, why don't you tell us how and why you got involved?
Sure. Well, towards the end of my military career, there were several of us Hispanics that had and other minorities that had risen to the rank of general. So we thought, hey, you know, we finally arrived. You know, that the Air Force has finally recognized that minorities are important, and we're rising to the ranks. And then I retired, and then through contacts with some of my former officers, and particularly Eddie Cabrera, who's the founder of the HVLA. I sort of became aware of the fact that maybe I was the last class to rise to the rank of general, and things had gone downhill since then. So Eddie had put together a bunch of data that he'd identified, and I looked at it and I said, oh, yeah, this is a serious problem that we're facing now, and we have to do something about it. So I joined the HVLA probably about 3 years ago, before the IRDR, the racial diversity review that came out in December 2020. So, and been most active with them since.
Let's give Eddie Cabrera some additional props here. I don't have his full resume, but I do have in front of me that he's a 1982 graduate of the United States Air Force Academy, where he earned his BS in astronautical engineering. He holds an MS and an MA. Again, another one of these really smart guys. I don't have the year that he retired, and I think his retirement rank was at a colonel level.
That's correct. He was a colonel.
So, you know, kudos to him for seeing a need for the Hispanic Veterans Leadership Alliance and reaching out to gentlemen like you guys. Joseph, how did a nice retired brigadier general busy in the private sector find himself pulled into the Hispanic Veterans Leadership Alliance?
Yeah, when I was on active duty, I was involved in recruiting Hispanic youth, both officer and enlisted, into the Marine Corps. And after I retired, we had made some progress with the number of Hispanics that had been recruited. And then after a few years, I looked back and saw all the colonels and generals seemed to be Hispanic colonels and generals in the Marine Corps were leaving the service. So I said, hey, that's something we need to pay more attention to. And I joined HVLA about a year ago, but became a board member only about 4 months ago. A friend of mine is also on the board, Rico Aponte, and he had shared with me some of the work they were doing. So I was when he offered me to join, I had my hand in the air and said, yeah, it's something I'd like to do, see if we can improve the leadership. You know, in the Marine Corps, there's certainly a lot of enlisted Hispanics, but we don't have the numbers in the officer corps that we need to, especially the senior officers.
Well, see, they didn't teach you guys anything in Marines. You never volunteer. Come on. The Army guys would have known that. No, I'm kidding. The HVLA's mission, which is set out as, and I should say that Hispanic Veterans Leadership Alliance is a nonprofit 501c3 organization, and its mission is to advance the inclusion of Latinos across all leadership levels in the United States Armed Forces, military and civilian positions. So it's a, you know, it's a solid mission that I don't think anybody can really disagree with, and its board is a bunch of really impressive guys like yourself. As HVLA has looked at this issue. I guess let me turn to something that is currently put out and commenting on, and maybe it creates a new opportunity to have people look at Hispanics' service in the military a little differently. And that is, as the DOD kind of tries to figure out what do we do with these Confederate name bases, and we go through base renaming, there's been some suggestion by the alliance that you should look at Hispanic military men and rename accordingly. Joseph, can you talk to us a little bit about the thinking here?
Certainly. Part of the mission and vision of HVLA is not just to increase the number, is that our the makeup, particularly the senior level, should reflect society as a whole. And society as a whole, you know, has 18% increasing to 20% Hispanics. So we should have that in the senior ranks. For the bases, one of the other things I did prior to retirement is I was the commander of the Marine Corps installations in the Pacific. So the Marine Corps did not have a bunch of bases named after Confederate officers or Confederate folks. And so, you know, the Army does, and in particular. So we felt that, you know, these should be representative of our society. You know, we do have, and particularly here, and I live in Houston, and not far from here, and as I mentioned, where my father retired from was Fort Hood, named after a former Confederate general from Texas. And we have, you know, several very stellar Hispanic soldiers, two in particular that were both from Texas. And that was, one was Master Sergeant Roy Benavides, and the other one was General Cavazos. And they, you know, were originally both from Texas, and they're both buried at the cemetery, the National Cemetery, Veteran Cementerya Fort Sam Houston. So, you know, we felt that it was fitting, particularly with some of the issues that Fort Hood had last year. And they both had experience at Fort Bragg as well. So that's why HVLA says, you know, these would be stellar candidates. You know, General Cavazos not only was the first general officer in the Army, Hispanic, he was the first four-star general officer. And he has two separate Distinguished Service Crosses. That's the next level down from a Medal of Honor, one in the Korean War and one in Vietnam. Really a distinguished man, a great soldier. And Roy Benavides, Medal of Honor winner. And if you read, if you understand some of his history, he went to Vietnam the first time in, I believe it was 1965, got injured, came back, was recuperating in the hospital for over a year, was told that he was not going to be able to walk again. He forced himself up to walk, and within a year, he was released from the hospital. And a year later, or 2 years later, in 1968, he found himself, was able to convince the Army to let him go back to Special Forces, and went back to Vietnam, where he earned his Medal of Honor. And they thought he was dead then. At that time, they actually had loaded him in a body bag and was shipping him back when he started to fight with the doctor. That they said, I guess this guy's not dead. So he came back later, awarded the Medal of Honor. So these two soldiers are tremendous records. So we thought they should be fitting and should be considered to be named. Having been a base commander, I know the name of a base carries importance to the service members that are serving there. So, you know, that's why we felt that, you know, personally, I felt it was wrong having the bases named after Confederate soldiers. But, you know, no matter which way you are on that issue, it's already been decided that they're going to be renamed. So we thought these two soldiers in particular should be considered for the naming of these bases.
Yeah, I don't know how you could find two better men to honor with naming bases. Roy Benavides is a Medal of Honor recipient. That right there tells you that his story is above most, in both in valor and heroism. And I'm not familiar, and I am familiar with Benavides' story. I'm not familiar with General Cavazos' story. And as the first Hispanic four-star general, we all should be sort of alerted to that. That's, again, one of those prestigious, you don't get four stars for nothing, and his two distinguished service crosses are a testament to his valor as well. So those are both great names. Let me ask a question.
He came from a relatively poor family, and he managed to get into Texas Tech, and he had an ROTC was a distinguished graduate from ROTC there. And both him and his brother also rose to be the U.S. Secretary of Education. So they both pulled themselves up and did quite well. So
is there, let me ask this, I should know this, and you know, but I guess there's hundreds of bases in Army, Air Force, etc. Are there bases named after Hispanic military men?
Not that I know of.
Well, that sort of answers it right there.
Yeah, there's not major bases. There is I know there's a training camp in Korea. I think it's called the Rodriguez Camp. So yeah, there's no major bases that I am aware of that are named for Hispanics.
Well, that leans heavily in favor here of what HVLA is promoting. But there's one more name for Naval Station Rota in Spain that it's promoting. Tell us a little bit about that, if you will, General Medina.
Yeah, that would be Admiral Horacio Rivero. He is actually from Puerto Rico, and he went to the U.S. Naval Academy from Puerto Rico, and graduated prior to World War II. So he served in World War II. In fact, he received a Bronze Star with a Combat V while in World War II on one of the ships, and that was during the Guadalcanal campaign. But he rose to become an admiral. As a matter of fact, he was the admiral that President Kennedy tapped to lead the fleet for the Cuban Missile Crisis for the blockade around Cuba. You know, he later served as a vice chief of naval operations in the Navy, and so he has been quite a distinguished career. You know everything from World War II, the Korean War, and in fact he was the vice chief of naval operations during the Vietnam War as well. So he's well deserving. He is from Puerto Rico, so he should certainly be considered for that base.
Well, it's an interesting mix of gentlemen, all with very distinguished records, which is why the Hispanic Veterans Leadership Alliance is putting these names forward. And they're really making recommendations to people that, since the Department of Defense has a naming commission, you can actually reach out to that commission and say, hey, we support this name or that name, and HVLA would like you to support these three names. And that website for the naming commission is www.thenamingcommission.gov. I'm just hoping Department of Defense didn't pay a whole lot of money to figure that name out. thenamingcommission.gov. As you have been talking about base renaming and thinking about Hispanic military men who should be honored here with base naming, what kind of reaction have you gentlemen received from your colleagues, DOD, active duty folks, on this idea that if you're going to have this opportunity to rename, do it in some of them in the name of Hispanic veterans.
Yeah, I have seen very positive comments on this. I do know one of the members on the base renaming committee is a former commandant of the Marine Corps. And although he is, that was General Neller, and although he has not said he prefers any specific name, he has indicated that he felt that the bases should be named to reflect our society. So I think another member on the committee is also the first black female four-star general or admiral Michelle Howard. So I think with the diversity of the naming commission, I believe there will certainly be they're going to cast a wide net and consider everyone, but I would expect that their solutions will have some reflection, will be a closer reflection to our current society than the old bases.
Well, we want to recommend folks go to the Hispanic Veterans Leadership Alliance website, which is hvlavets.org, for some more information on this and certainly on the backgrounds on these two generals who we're talking to. I'd like to, at this time, though, bring Charlie into this a little bit more.
Sure.
Because it's right up on the homepage, and it just came, some of these statistics, and there was just a report issued. The Inspector General of the Air Force issued a report of inquiry and disparity in September of 2021. And as mentioned, 18% of the U.S. population are Hispanics, and 17% of the military members are Hispanics. So they really serve in a representative fashion, consistent with their population throughout the country. But then it kind of gets worse from there. The number of DOD civilians is only 8%. The number of Hispanic officers is only 8%. The number of generals and admirals is only 1% of all generals and admirals are Hispanic. So it kind of falls off from there. Brigadier General Carlos Martinez, as you review this and look back on your time in the service, give us an update. What's the current status of things in terms of how Hispanics and Latinos are being treated in the military?
Well, I think I want to go back a little background. HVLA, when the DOD or the Air Force first came out with their IRDR in December 2020, HVLA did a detailed analysis of it. And while that report was focused on African Americans in the Air Force, there was a lot of data that also showed the disparities in Hispanics. So we looked at that information. We presented a letter to the Chief of Staff of the Air Force, pointing that out and requesting that they do a second review that looks at a broader perspective, not just African Americans, but Hispanics, Asian Americans, Pacific Islanders, Native Americans, et cetera. And we sent that to the Chief of Staff of the Air Force, and I believe it was in February of late January, early February 2020. And we were very pleased to find out that the Air Force took our comments to heart and immediately undertook the deep dive that we requested, which resulted in that September 21 report, the diversity review that cut across all the different minorities. Now, from that report, one of the portions of that report are comments, individual comments that members have made, and you can tell from the comments that there is still a degree of feeling that there's discrimination ongoing within the military. People don't feel that they're being treated as fairly as they could be. One of the things that came out in the diversity review is that it's not just a matter that the Hispanics and other minorities aren't being promoted to the upper ranks. is that they also seem to be overrepresented in such matters as the administration of military justice, and they're underrepresented in selection to command positions, which are a prerequisite for advancement up the ranks.
Yeah, Charlie, that's one of the things that jumped out at me in reviewing the report, was that military justice and discipline and administrative disciplinary actions and discharges, particularly that latter for enlisted members, were 25% more likely for right. Hispanic and Latino enlisted members. Yeah. And you know, once you get a ding in your record, you're not going anywhere, right? You know,
right.
So it sort of starts at that ground level, doesn't it?
Exactly. And one of the things that happens is, not only if you get that that ding, as you say, on your record, basically knocks you out of potentials for promotion. But the other aspect is, it's important for promotion is to have achieved leadership positions, to be a squadron commander, to be a wing commander. And those positions have not been historically given to the minorities. And when you go up for the higher level promotion boards, they look at the whole record like, well, what command positions have you held? Well, if you haven't held command positions, well, you're at a disadvantage again. Now, one of the things that the Air Force, and in fact, we've had discussions with the DOD itself on the matters of the diversity, is they tend to believe that it's a recruitment problem, and that they're trying very hard to recruit more Hispanic members and other minorities. And I argue that it's not a recruitment problem, it's a retention problem. As Joe pointed out, he noticed lots of fellow colonels and generals that were, you know, that were bailing out of the Marine Corps. And we have noted, I think the Navy did a report last year that indicated that there was a large number of members of the Navy that were getting out in the about the 10 to 12 year point. And the same thing we find in the Air Force, because this is that point in your career where you're looking to see, can I advance higher up in the ranks? And if you look to the leadership that you've encountered, if you haven't seen fellow Hispanics as colonels and generals, you start getting, you know, the feeling that, well, maybe this is a white man's club, and I really don't belong here, and maybe I need to go for, you know, for look for a job outside of the military, and that's what tends to happen. So I kind of liken and I pointed it out to the when we met with the DOD last year, is that they're trying to solve the promotion problem, recruitment problem, but not focusing on the issues on retention. And what I likened it to is like trying to keep a bucket of water filled by pouring more water into it, not realizing that there's a hole in the bottom where the water's leaking out. First, you got to pick, then you can add water.
Yes, no, certainly. And one of the things, though, I guess I'd say, Charlie, is the good news is that they did the report, because as we all know, you kind of manage to the numbers. You got to have some good data to be able to manage to. And I thought this report, you know, the downside was some of the data, but the plus side was, okay, this helps maybe sharpen the focus on some things that can easily be corrected. Do you have the right. same view of this?
We're very pleased that they did the report, and the report took a dive in all the directions that we requested, and particularly we asked that they look at not just the active duty, which is what the IRDR in December 2020 had looked at, but we asked that they look at the Air National Guard, the Air Force Reserve, and the active duty forces separately to see how the three groups vary. And there are some slight differences there, which we suspected, you know, because of the way that promotions are handled in each of those three components of the military. But we are very pleased that that they did the deep dive. The data that showed basically supported the arguments that the HVLA has been making for years, that there is a lot of disparity. And we were encouraged by the fact that in the sort of final conclusions of the DR, one of the recommendations is that they have to hold leaders accountable. We're very big on accountability. Having numbers doesn't help you if you don't take corrective action and hold people accountable for the corrective action. Now, the one part that they did say in the report, and we have to agree with, is that the report just reflects the facts. It does not go into the causal factors. And one of the things that we believe they need to do as a follow-up study is, and perhaps those subjective questionnaires that were included in the report of the first step, is you have to understand what the causal factors are. Because unless you know what the cause of the problems are in the military, it's difficult to come up with corrective actions. So we're hoping that they do something in that regard.
Well, again, I think this is a step forward and something everybody should be supportive of. And I agree, you gotta drill maybe down a little farther to get into the causal factors. I want to thank each of you for taking some time to talk to Veterans Radio. I think it's important that we get the message out to our listeners about the great service of our Hispanic Americans that have been in the military since the beginning. And that maybe everybody can seize on this base renaming and kind of get off the Confederate thing and get on to, hey, this is a great opportunity to recognize some Hispanic veterans. And really appreciate the time that you've given to Veterans Radio today. Brigadier General Charlie Martinez, retired from the Air Force, and Brigadier General Joseph Medina, retired from the United States Marine Corps. Gentlemen, I really appreciate the time.
Our pleasure.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. Been great to be able to talk to some veterans.